Hello, friends. You are listening to 101.9 FM CITR Community Radio, broadcasting live from UBC's Point Grey campus, situated on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people. At CITR, we endeavor to create and uplift local alternative arts and culture, and we're forever grateful for the privilege to do so on this land. You are listening to Amateur Hour, the return of Amateur Hour. I have been MIA for about a month between certain scheduling difficulties towards the end of May and a month-long study program in South Africa. I have been out of the country and not on the airwaves, but today marks the glorious return and the beginning of our summer season. We have an incredible slate of artists on this summer, and it's going to be a great time. For those of you tuning in for the first time, this is Amateur Hour. Thank you for joining us. On Amateur Hour, we sit down with local amateur and student musicians to talk about the music they make and the music they love. My name is Ewan. I am your host. And in the studio with me today, I have Julien Lavoie. Solo artist with a great band.
Thank you.
Julien, tell us about you and your music.
I've been making music for, quite a long time, the last 15 years. And right now I'm doing a project which is mostly a solo project, but I have a really cool band with really cool people that play these songs with me live. So it's kind of a mix of the solo stuff I make and put out online, and then a very different style and interpretation of those same songs in a live setting.
Yeah, well, I'm very excited to get into that and talk about the kind of, I think one of the things we keep returning to is the difference between, recording music, writing music, and performing it live. I saw you at Grey Lab, I believe was the name of the venue.
Grey Lab, yes, RIP.
Yeah,
May. I mean, they're still alive, but...
Oh, are they?
But they might, I won't say anything else.
Well, that's juicy gossip. anyways, you brought a couple songs with you today. The first one we're going to listen to here is Always, It's Always.
Yes.
Do you have anything you want to say before we throw this on?
This was one of the first songs I put out with this solo project, and it kind of like guided the rest of the songs that I put out with at least the album that it came out on. So it was kind of like the vibe setter for that whole era of my music. It came from a much more depressed and recently broken up with mental state, which I'm no longer in, thankfully. I think that's pretty much it.
All right.
Hopefully people enjoy it.
Well, friends, this is Always It's Always by the incredible Julien Lavoie. Please enjoy. It's always when you live, I find each time I close my eyes, I'm dreaming that you are keeping me. and we are back. That was Always It's Always by Julian Lavoie. This is Amateur Hour. Thank you for joining us. I have Julian in the studio with us today. Julian, that was wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
I really like to get a lot of different kind of different artists, different genres on the show. I remember when I saw your show live, just these kind of, I think you described as lo-fi, but like these kind of psychedelic soundscapes you got going on are really, really enchanting. I don't have much more to say on it than that, but really, really great stuff.
Thank you.
So yeah, I want to talk to you about where this started. You know, it's the question I ask a lot of people, like, where did music start for you? Like, you know, I feel like in our culture in modern day, you know, everyone listens to music and kind of always has, but what was the point where you decided this was something that you were going to like make?
Well, I mean, like when I was very young, my dad was like a piano player. He'd always be improvising and playing piano at the house. And he was just a very musical person. So he would play all kinds of like amazing music that kind of defined my music taste during my early years. Mainly that kind of like converged on a big passion for the Beatles.
Yeah.
And I just like loved the Beatles. I loved like the songwriting, the harmonies, the instrumentation, the recording techniques, like everything about them. And I remember there was like a few years where it was like, in my mind, it was only the Beatles. Like they were the only band that existed that was worth listening to. And then I had like a friend in high school who kind of started showing me other stuff. I think it was Bohemian Rhapsody, where I was like, oh, other bands can make good music too. And then I listened to like a lot of psychedelic rock music. I started getting into like grunge and post-punk and just all kinds of genres. And it was like around grade 10 or something. So I was like maybe 14 or 15. And I had been playing guitar for a long time, but I was just doing covers and I was just like jamming to songs that had already been written.
Yeah.
But then I started smoking weed.
Okay.
And I was like sitting there with the guitar and I was like, why am I playing other people's stuff when I could make my own stuff?
Yeah.
And I just started like, I don't know, I was like in this daze playing my guitar and playing chords that I hadn't heard put together before. And it was just so much more fulfilling than anything else I had done. And that kind of just like carried on. And I found it to be like the best way to express yourself and express feelings that you can't express in any other way, is to just sit down with a guitar and sing and play stuff that no one's ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
And you can express all these feelings that are unexpressible in regular, normal language.
And there's something really fulfilling about just like going on a tangent, like creating something, like just sitting there either jamming or I'm a writer, I write a lot of stuff, and just kind of like rambling down and just being like, oh, I've made something suddenly. Like I actually like this. Like it's weird because, you know, it can be very passive. I think for a lot of artistic people, like creating things and just making art can get to be a passive thing. Just kind of like, oh, I'm just doing the thing that's fun and easy. And then all of a sudden you surprise yourself with, oh, wow, like I've made something I like that I'm proud of. I agree. That is like a very fulfilling moment. So that kind of sparked you into how'd you get from like kind of these dazed, like, you know, jam sessions.
Stoner guitar.
Yeah, alone with the guitar to writing music, to, like, making stuff that you were putting out.
Well, I mean, I was lucky enough to be, like, surrounded by a lot of other musicians, and they were all kind of coming into their own at the same time as myself. And that made it really easy to kind of jump from, like, sitting alone, semi-stoned, playing songs that I'd written to going to my friends and being like, hey, we should start a band and start playing together. And I mean, that opens up a whole new door. And the idea of like improvising an entire song just like on the floor for the first time, that kind of like synergy and like back and forth that you get is a really fulfilling and unique feeling that you can get. And that kind of drew me more towards improvisation and just in general, like group performances and group playing, and that kind of, you know, that kind of lay underneath most of my musical endeavors for the next while. It was like wanting to play with bands, wanting to play on stage and create things on the spot. So that is kind of like what led me to where I am now. But then there's always this kind of duality of like where I'm at home alone just playing songs that are like pure representations of what I'm like emotions that I'm feeling in that moment versus that kind of like spontaneous music creation that I have with a group of people in a, you know, in a studio or like on stage or something like that. And they're just two very different things that both give me that like creative fulfillment that I'm looking for. That's pretty much it.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, I kind of want to springboard there into the topic of performance and the music you're kind of working with now. I find listening to a lot of these music, you know, compared to some of our previous guests, it's a little bit more of this kind of mellow energy that I really like. But how do you feel that translates to performing to a live audience? Like, how do you kind of adapt these songs and how do you find the feeling is performing this kind of lo-fi music?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, when you're making recorded songs, like, you're making it kind of with an audience in mind of people that are sitting around and just like listening to music with their headphones and like really deeply engaging with it.
I'm gonna grab the door.
But it's very different when you're playing for a crowd, because like you have a whole group of people that you're playing with. You have like the whole band, but you also have an additional member, which is the group of people that are listening to it. And that creates like an additional feedback loop of the way that they react to certain things, the way you can expect them to react to certain things. And that kind of ends up guiding the way that you create music spontaneously on the stage. Mm-hmm. And so it's strange because like most of my music I write, record, like I do everything on my own in my bedroom. So there's no audience there, and I'm thinking of it as like a one-to-one, mm-hmm. somebody sitting there listening with headphones. But when I play it live, it's a totally different creature that I'm trying to create. And because of that, I end up thinking of the music in a new way, where I'm trying to think of it in terms of how it would translate to a live setting. And so it ends up just being a very different type of music that is played live. But like with live music, it's got to be enjoyable. Like people want to dance to it, people want to like have fun, there's got to be like energy. Mm-hmm. That stuff is not necessary when you're just doing recordings at home.
No, there's definitely like a disconnect between like the kind of music you want to hear when you're out on a Friday night versus like it's you with your phone, with your headphones, with a computer, like alone. There's a lot more kind of stuff that you'd want to just kind of have that personal connection to. I think there's a lot of, I feel like most people have those kind of musicians, right? They have the musicians that they're going to play at a party and the musicians that they're going to listen to on their own. And I feel like, with your music, you kind of get a little bit of the best of both in a way that's, seems really gratifying.
Well, I mean, I try to get the best of both as much as I can. I feel like when I write music, it's kind of with the person sitting on the bus looking out the window. That's like the person I have in mind. But then I can't, like, I need to do something different on stage.
Yeah.
Especially, like, when you're kind of an unknown artist and you're playing for an audience of people that don't really know you, you don't want to just, like, immediately hit them with this, like, heavy, emotional shit. I mean,
here's
stuff.
The most depressed. Yeah. You didn't hear that.
That's going to, like, you know, throw them off of your sound. Yeah. Like, you want them to have fun and, like, dance and, like, enjoy themselves. You can't make them all depressed.
Sure.
Immediately, at least.
Yeah. On that note, before we hopped on the mics here, you talked a little bit about the music scene in Vancouver and struggles with kind of like, you know, establishing oneself. And as comparatively one of the artists with a larger following of the ones that we've interviewed on this show, I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Talking about Vancouver and its music scene and kind of the troubles with a lack of infrastructure there.
Yeah, I mean, the Vancouver music scene is like, you know, one of the most beautiful scenes and also one of the most tragic scenes that I can think of. And I think that the people in the scene are the ones that have allowed it to be anything at all. There's just so many people that are like so creative, so passionate, and so willing to put in all this work to make it something amazing. But at the same time, the city, it just seems like they don't care about the music. They don't want it to be something that they curate. Unless it's like immediately profitable, unless it's something that they can see like a tangible return on investment in, they don't want to put money into making spaces for music, to like establishing venues, to supporting things. And what ends up happening is like at most we have these like, we have like three or four underground venues that are really amazing and that people put a whole bunch of work into sustaining. But then like they face just constant backlash from the city. They have people, like officials coming. They have fines that are just nonstop. The police are trying to shut down shows.
Yeah.
And they don't get any external funding. Like, it's literally like a losing battle. And that ends up causing, you know, all of these venues to, like, they sustain themselves while they can, and eventually they kind of disappear.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to maintain, like, a strong music scene when you don't have those, like, staples, like those venues that everybody knows they can go to get good music.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I've heard people say, like, you know, Vancouver has no scene, man. Vancouver's got no scene.
Yeah,
and it's terrible. Yeah, it's bull stuff for sure. No, it's tragic when I hear that, because you know, I'm Vancouver born and raised. I've been here all my life. And
me too.
You know, I love this city. You know, it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. Just like if you're looking out off the coast. The trees we got here, man.
Everything.
And, like, there's so much, but it feels so much like the city lacks an identity at times. Like, it feels like we're missing something, and that there's this kind of, like, you know, cynicism to it that, you know, can be really exhausting and really burn out. And I don't think it's a fault of the people here, you know? I think, like you said, there's so many incredible artistic and creative people here who are making good and bad art, and we need both of that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there is this kind of machinery at play that seems to crush a lot of these things that could kind of spawn this cultural identity. You know, I think having a solid music scene in a way that, you know, a number of other cities have, you're mentioning, you know, like Seattle, Montreal, all these places.
Exactly.
Is a great way to foster that kind of, you know, sense of community and sense of identity that I think Vancouver often lacks.
To me, it's like the city is just filled with sellouts.
Mm.
The people that make decisions in the city, they're all just sellouts. And so they're looking for whatever can make them the most money.
Yep.
And unfortunately, the arts at like the kind of underground level are not something that's immediately profitable.
No.
And so you have to be willing to make art just for the intrinsic value of art. You can't be looking at it as something that's like, oh, like, you know, I got to get my ROI, like 16%. I put in $100,000. I got to get, you know, I got to get $116,000 back. You got to, like, look at it as something that's just valuable in and of itself and be willing to, I don't know, to maybe lose something or break even. And especially, like, the, you know, the municipal government are the ones that, like, they should be supporting it more. And it just feels a lot of the time like, I don't know, like they hate music or something.
Yeah.
They're just shutting stuff down.
This city is cripplingly expensive. You know, everything costs so much. It is so hard to live here. You know, I think the days of people, you turn 18, you go, you move out of your family's house, you live in your own apartment, like it's gone. You know, it's not a thing as much anymore. You know, you don't have that luxury. We densify instead of making things easier to live in.
That raises a good point because, I mean, I feel like, because I've been in it for so long, I feel a lot of like anger at how the scene is not like, materialize into something consistent and strong. But I feel like probably a lot of that is just incidental. Like, it's nobody's fault. It's just the way that this system works. And like, the rage is not really directed at anyone.
Yeah.
It's just, unfortunately, the city's so expensive. There's not a lot of ways to support artists if they're not, like, immediately profitable. It's not anyone's fault. So I don't want that to be.
But I mean, at the same time, you know, like the city's in a rough
finger of blame.
In a rough state, and you know, there are certain parties at play that make it rougher every year. You know, that makes housing more expensive. That makes all these things get worse and worse. And you know, I think that's kind of where things stem from to a certain degree. You know, I don't think it's because Vancouverites are inherently antisocial or because Vancouverites don't have this appreciation. It is because we are in a place that is so hard to just make ends meet that there's not an infrastructure for the things that should matter more than that.
Yeah,
because 100%. At the end of the day, people got to survive. And unfortunately, it's becoming more and more cutthroat, more business oriented. So I applaud, you know, everyone who comes on this show who is a Vancouver artist who is just, you know, pushing against that and, you know, still getting out there, still making this stuff, because even though there isn't that infrastructure, even though there isn't, you know, a supportive, stable scene, there's still a scene of people, you know, making this music and continuing to put it out and continuing to deal with all of the mess of venues and lacking funding and all that kind of stuff and still making Vancouver music. And I hope people listening to the show, if you take away anything from the show, is that there are so many people here, so many people making music. You can listen to it online. You can go to as many live shows as possible, as much as you can afford on rent in Vancouver.
Take a risk. Go to a show filled with people you've never heard of before. Yep. Go see people. Support the local scene. You won't regret it. 100%. This city's filled with talented people.
100%. I've been nonstop listening to an album by a band that we should have on later in the summer, The Vetoes. They opened for a Scott Pilgrim tribute show that I went to with some friends because it sounded like fun. It was fun. But man, these guys are good. And they have like 100 monthly listeners or something when I checked. And it's like, this is quality stuff. This is good, like Canadian rock and roll. And yeah, I think, you know, it comes down to when there isn't that infrastructure, we need more independent actors engaging with this. You know, as many people as we can looking into local artists, looking into smaller people, not out of a hipster, you know, desire to only listen to fringe music, but because it's good music, man.
Well, you can end up being a trendsetter if you find the,
that too.
If you find the bands that are underground, you're the first one to.
No, but being pretentious is always fun. all right. Well, on that note, I think we are going to throw it over to a bit of a break here. We got one more song from Julian here under the title of "Would You Mind." Any thoughts you want to throw on this before we toss it on?
Yeah. Would you mind? Let's see. I mean, it was one of the later songs I recorded and one of the only songs that I had other people kind of help me with. So I had the drummer in my live band, Michael Wadham. He's playing drums on the ending of this song. And I had my good friend, Jordan Heaney. He did the mixing for this song. And so this is almost all of the album was like just me alone in my bedroom losing my mind. But this song I did seek external help from. Yeah. And I appreciate those people endlessly for that.
No, for sure. It's you know, often a collaborative medium. So I feel like it's good that we get a sample of both. Well, friends, this is Would You Mind by Julian Levois. And we'll be back after the break. Please enjoy.
Thank you. The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 18th to the 22nd. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, art, and much more in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Featuring Japanese punk rock four-piece Otoboke Beaver as guest curator, Brooklyn-based R&B queen Yaya Bay, Canadian synth pop heroes Tops, trailblazing Australian psych rock outfit Tropical Fuckstorm, celebrated hip-hop collective Odyssey and Good Company, Boston slowcore trio Horse Jumper of Love, LA experimental noise rock group Shushu, breathtaking ambient harpist Mary Lattimore, outlandish egg punk band Snooper, genre-defined Chicago drummer Micaiah McCraven, and many more. Plus, there's over 150 more artists still to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19 inspired changes, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
It was assumed that the South was a thing that took place somewhere else. We grew up in a town that our parents just found on a job search and liked it quite well. Who had so many friends who arrived just like them, so their kids were our kin for a spell. It was assumed that the South was a thing that took place somewhere else. Like the feeling of home was a book on a loan from a college town private school show. We took in every chapter with interest and laughter, but never quite a sense of ourselves. A dangerous narrative, haunting comparative, led us little kids to believe that the place we were from shed a sheen which we shunned like the salt of the sweat dipping down from our sleeves. Was assumed that the South was a thing that took place somewhere else, like the sun that went down on the edge of my town progressed no further west as it fell. And on visits to relatives, couldn't quite tell, cause its pounding heart sank as it swelled. It was assumed that the South was a thing that took place somewhere else, as the Jim Crow geographies didn't haunt all of the streetscapes we come to know well. Not just the old neoclassical mansions we passed, to the high school had stories to tell. Talking debutantes, our nascent class conscience, obnoxious displays. Was assumed that the South was a thing that took place somewhere else, and maybe it was, which I say just because we weren't noticing where power was held.
captivated the capital's capitocratic, or why liberal logics prevailed. It was assumed that the South was a thing that took place somewhere else. Multiracial resistance, greedful ambitions cast out in revisionist spells. Power concedes about as much as it leads, as we start to see for ourselves. Production, subjection, resistance, escape, seen squarely through this disidentified gaze. And through textbooks and TVs, our modernist ways could never quite focus our participating, renewing, rejecting, affirming, negating.
Did you hear that?
Through the best of times, through the worst of times.
Attention, attention, attention. All artists, zine makers, writers, musicians, community organizers, activists, anarchists, proles, punks, and weirdos. Now is the time to make your voice heard at the 3rd annual Anarchist Book Fair. We want you in all of your resistance to colonialism. We want to platform your rage against the current political climate and join hands with you in saying enough. We're looking for folks who engage in community building, mutual aid, active resistance, skill building, and knowledge sharing to table booths and propose workshops on October 9th and 10th of 2025. This is an anarchist space, which means it opposes hierarchies and seeks to amplify unheard voices and build communities of mutual aid and support. First come, first serve. 50% of tables reserved for marginalized voices. You can email sponsorship@citr.ca to state your interest and be part of Anarchist Book Fair. sponsorship@citr.ca.
Are you a writer?
Listener?
Dreamer?
Music nerd?
Want to cover artists?
Visit venues?
Write something?
Events?
Personal essays?
Anything!
Submit to Discorder magazine and then take it a step further on Hail Discordia with your hosts, Zoe
and Izzy. Hail Discordia is an audio translation of Discorder magazine. We interview writers, play music and soundscapes, and do a deep dive of each zine issue. Hail Discordia plays at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the third Thursday of every month on CITR 101.9 FM.
Submit something for the magazine and come onto the show, or just tune in and listen. We promise it's worth it.
And we are back. You were just listening to Leave It in the Sun by the incredible Jeff Rosenstock. Jeff Rosenstock is an American artist, unfortunately, but otherwise they are incredible. I've been a fan of theirs for a while. That is off their album No Dream. I was just talking to Julian earlier that Rosenstock is an artist with the rare gift of being incredible at crafting albums, creating like an album as a coherent piece of art, start to finish, with transitions, with thematic coherence, with like common refrains and all that kind of stuff. If you haven't checked him out, check him out. Wonderful, wonderful artist. This is Amateur Hour. Amateur Hour is a show here on 101.9 FM, CITR Community Radio. Forgot to do my call sign at the top of the break. We sit down here and talk with local amateur and student musicians about the music they make and the music they love. I'm here with Julien Lavoie. Before the break, we talked about the music they make, and now we're going to get into the music they love. I've asked Julien to bring a couple of songs with him from some artists that he likes but feels that maybe not so many people know about. You've brought two artists with you. We have Gadfly and Saband, if I'm pronouncing that last one right.
No, that's right.
We're going to listen to the songs that they have back to back. So do you want to, before listeners hear those two, say anything about one or the other?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll start by saying this about myself. I'm a cesarean born.
Okay.
You wouldn't be able to tell that by looking at me, but you can tell because every time I leave a building, I leave through the window.
Nice.
Anyways.
Great.
I just thought I'd share that with you guys as a little bit of my backstory. But Saband is one of my best friends. He is an amazing musician. He's been in the scene for the last like 10 years. He's been playing amazing stuff. His solo stuff, he does guitar for other bands, but Saband is kind of like his project. I don't know if they're on hiatus right now or if they've stopped completely, but this album that this song is from is one of the earlier albums. It was recorded very similarly to mine, which was just in a bedroom, just like solo produced and everything. This is one of my favorite songs. Gadfly is one of the best bands in Vancouver. If you get the chance to see them live, they're amazing. One of the most electric live shows you'll see. Like, you just can't help but moshing or at least, like, bobbing your head. And the music is, like, just so powerful, so raw, so angry. And Homa and Nigel, Homa writes all the music. Nigel plays drums in the band. Amazing band. So both of these guys, if you have the chance to see either of them play, I highly recommend it. Two of my favorites in the scene.
All right. Well, we're going to listen to Lemonade by Gadfly, followed by Keep It on the Low by Saband. Friends, please enjoy in 1, 2...
keep it on the low for you.
And we are back. You were just listening to Keep It on the Low by Saband. Before that was Lemonade by Gadfly. This is Amateur Hour on 101.9 FM CITR Community Radio. I'm here with, what would we say, lo-fi rock artist?
Yeah, lo-fi, Julian Lavoie. Bedroom pop.
Lavoie. I mispronounced your name, even though I put all that effort to make sure I didn't mispronounce it.
No, that sounded right.
I went for Lavoie first and then got Lavoie.
You know what? To make you feel better, my grandpa went by Lavoie because he hated that he was French.
Yeah.
So right. you're in good company with my grandpa.
We were just talking about how we love that most French Canadians are self-deprecating, including the both of us with some French Canadian background. Anyways, let's talk about the music we just listened to. You mentioned kind of having a personal connection to both of these artists. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I would say so. Saband, that is the musical project of David Saband. And he just changed his last name, added a D, so it was a Saband.
Nice.
But he's one of my very close friends. We hang out regularly. We make music together. He just put out a new album in the last month or two, and I did feature on one of the songs there. So if you guys want to check that out, it's a really great
Definitely
album.
Definitely check that
it's
out.
It's called Hotboxing the Yaris. It's a great album. And then with Gadfly, I've known them for quite a long time. I'm not like quite as close with them, but the main songwriter Homa is just amazing. One of the coolest people in the scene. She makes really amazing music, inspired by all kinds of stuff. I believe she described it as Persian psych rock. Mm. So her music's amazing. Nigel, the drummer, and her partner, they make the music together. It's just an amazing band, and I've been friends with them for a pretty long time, and both of them just have some of the most amazing live shows that I've ever seen in the scene.
Great.
So much energy.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I want to discuss in regards to this is, and it's a thing that I'm facing more and more as I do this show and I meet more musicians and become more friends with the people that I interview, is listening to friends' music and like listening to these, you know, obscure artists that you have this personal connection with and like starting to fall in love with music of people that you like see every other weekend, right? And it's kind of an interesting experience, and I want to know like what your experience is with like being a listener and a fan of, you know, both obscure artists and artists that you personally know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's actually a really good question. I mean, I feel like when you kind of form a connection with new music, it is a very personal connection, and it's between you and the song. And it's based on whatever experiences you've had in the past and your own feelings and emotions and how the song like reflects those. But then at the same time, if there are people that you know, you kind of know their side of what went into the song. And so it creates this like new dynamic where you have like the artist and the art engager. And normally it's they're meeting each other through the art as a medium. But when you know the person that made the art, you also get kind of some background information as well. And I feel like it can kind of have a positive and a negative effect, because like in some ways you end up bringing the person that you know and whatever baggage they have as like a person that has a relationship with you, you bring that into the music. And so you don't look at the music quite as much as just this isolated, like independent thing that exists in the world. You look at it through the lens of like your friend, this person that you know who has made this thing.
Yeah.
But that also kind of enriches the art, because you understand like what went into making the art, and if you resonate with that, then it's even that leads to something even stronger.
Yeah,
something you just can't put into words.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people find they enrich their like music listening when they like, you know, watch these like rockumentaries or like, you know, do some research into bands, and they like get the context of like what was this song for, like who was it written for, about like what was going into this. So you get that context off the bat when you know the artist. But I get at the same time, like and I think this is even more true for like I'm friends with at least in high school, he was doing acting by the name of Ethan Farrell, wonderful person. Mm. And he was a great actor, but it was so hard to watch anything he was in, because I was like, oh, he's got his acting face on. Like, it's just like, I know that guy. And it can be like that with music, too. I think it's a little bit easier with music to melt into it and to forget, especially when it's more instrumental stuff.
Well, because, you end up, like, the relationship you have, a lot of that is through the face of the person that you look at while you, like, form this relationship with them. So if you're just listening to music, you're not looking at their face. If you had to stare into their eyes while their song played, then you might be like, man, I don't know about this song.
But at the same time, we watch our friends live, right? Like,
that's true.
You do see your friends perform up on stage, and you're like, you are looking them in the eye.
That is
true. And grooving. But, it is such an interesting thing, because, like, in some cases, I really love it because it feels like I've got an extra layer of like community with the people I'm listening to. And that's really exciting because it's like, no, that's so cheesy. I can't even say that. I was going to say that it's like every time I listen, it's like I'm at a live show. Awful.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
But I mean, you know, the sentiment's there, right? Like it's...
No, I fully agree with that.
Yeah.
I feel like by getting to know the person behind the music, you kind of like you form a narrative that in some ways like it transcends the particular piece of music that you're listening to, which is kind of like imminent. It's right there. You're listening to one piece from start to finish. But then if you have the idea of who the artist is beyond that, then like the song finishes and you're still in your mind, you still have this picture of who the artist is. Mm-hmm. That kind of, it transcends the individual pieces that they've made. And I mean, I guess in that case, it just kind of depends on how you connect with the artist as a person, and then how their embodiment through the art that they make also connects with you. And then so you can end up, that's how you form like those really deep personal connections to music and to artists. But it can also like turn a lot of people off. Like they will engage with something and then they'll be like, this is awesome. And they see an interview with the guy and they're like, ah, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
He's a dick.
Yeah. The art versus the artist whole thing. But I think, again, and kind of tying back to what we were talking about earlier, in a music scene like Vancouver, where there are so many people, and like, if you're a musician yourself, or if you're like really engaged in it, you get to know these people, just because there's kind of like a million and one really great niche artists here.
That's true.
As opposed to like a few staple like indie darlings that are climbing the, we have like what, Peach Pit? It's not that same thing where you get some of these other music scenes where there's like these big people, like rising stars. You have like a lot of these kind of like, these guys are your friends, or you know them through another artist that you're friends with, or this kind of thing. And that's very much been my experience with this show and with finding guests. Is a lot of the times it's people who I've met through people I already know, or you know, who are playing the same shows as people I'm at, or I get to do that cool thing where I see an artist perform that I like, and I go up after them and be like, I have a radio show, do you want to maybe which I've done a few times now. It's one of those things where it's like, I think it's an important question to consider if this is a scene that you're interested in being involved in, because you're gonna encounter it a lot.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, because it's like, it's a relatively small scene
mm-hmm.
in terms of the spaces that you go to engage with other people in the scene. You end up seeing a lot of the same people over and over again. But I feel like that it should, in theory, only have a positive effect. It's kind of like it's almost like a resonance effect, where the more people that are seeing each other over and over again and engaging with the same works of art and inspiring each other, they end up creating something that's larger than any of them even, and any of the individual pieces they make. And it creates something that anybody from the outside can kind of come into and engage with as just this whole like larger thing that faces them.
And I find it makes for a very personable scene as well. Like, I find like, you know, there's obviously exceptions. Some people are always going to be pretentious, but there's a little bit less pretension to it, I find, a lot of the times, just because like people know each other, and like they know they're kind of like all in this desperate fight together. And you end up like, I saw like a punk band whose name I can't remember that played another show with my friend. They ended up at just like a house party I was at, and they were like playing in the living room, and there was just like a mosh, and I was like, oh, that's sick. Awesome. Like, this is a band I know. And now like I'm talking to the lead singer, just cause like, he's just, you know, everyone's just kind of,
they're just
know,
there.
Yeah. They know each other, and it's this,
they're there.
It's a fun little scene. You know, I think it has a lot of, you know, struggles, and I think there's a lot of things that could help bolster it and make it more supported, but at its heart, it's great. You know, it's great people, and it's a great,
well, ultimately the thing is, the scene is filled with just almost too many people that love making art, that love the scene, and that want to foster a community.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so many people that are willing to do that. And that, like, you can just feel that when you go to local shows.
Yeah.
And like, in the larger picture, the bigger scale, there's not enough funding, there's not enough resources and different things, but the people, like, that doesn't change. That stays the same. And those people want to make a scene that lasts and that's valuable. And part of that is being open and welcoming.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think Vancouver is kind of known as like a cold city.
Yeah.
It's hard to like meet new people or break into friend groups or whatever. And like, I feel like that occurs in the music scene, but almost on like a cursory level where it's like,
yeah,
it might be the first impression is kind of like, well, I don't know you. I don't know if I feel safe around you yet. But like really quickly, like you go to a show and you mosh with them one time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to not be like, all right, you're awesome.
Yeah,
like, I'm going to keep hanging out with you.
And again, like I love that, like, gradually, one guest at a time, this show is kind of starting to be a bit of a part of that, where I can just kind of feel confident talking to an artist after a show and just getting these kind of conversations going. You know, I feel like we've covered a lot of ground here today.
That's true.
And that's great. These are the conversations worth having and worth broadcasting to CITR's lovely audience.
CITR, love you, CITR.
Yeah, we're reaching the end of our we're actually way over our hour here, but I didn't feel like stopping. So but we're gonna get to stopping now. Julian, you said during one of our breaks that you are starting to work on some new music, that you have a lot of songs that you've just yet to record.
Yes.
Where can people kind of keep an eye out for you, both in terms of stuff you're publishing and stuff that you're going to be performing?
Well, I will be hopefully in the next couple of months putting out between 1 to 10 songs,
mm-hmm. Okay.
depending on how productive I can be.
Yep.
But basically for the last year, I've been like hiding away, working on school stuff, and all I've had is my acoustic guitar. And because of that, I've been making a lot of folk music.
Oh,
that
awesome.
Ends up, it's kind of like a really bad impression of Bob Dylan. But with all of my like other, if you've listened to any of, well, my two songs tonight and any of my other stuff, it's kind of like that, but crossed with a really bad impression of Bob Dylan. So that is something I'm going to be working on over the next few weeks. And
yeah.
You can kind of follow up on that through, you know, either my Instagram or if you follow my Spotify, Bandcamp, any of those typical links, it should be coming up there.
And you can find all those under your name, yeah.
Under my name, Julian Lavoie.
That's L-A-V-O-I-E.
L-A-V-O-I-E, Julian, Mr. Julian Lavoie. Lavoie Band, anything you want to look up. You can look up Julian Vancouver Music. I tried it the other day. My name does show up.
That's
awesome. Have to go down a little bit, but
scroll
it is
10
there.
Pages and it'll show up eventually. If you search,
you
put
Julian
into Google, eventually you'll find him.
You go to page 30,
yeah,
and you'll find one link.
Yep. And it's the Bandcamp. All right. Well, keep an eye out for that. I'm very excited to hear your folk music. That's going to be
fun.
Thank you. We've got one last song for you guys here today. Favorite of the show, Plum Tree. I'm going to throw that on and play us out. After that, I believe the Ghost Mix should be coming back on until about 5, when, if the schedule is the same as I remember before I left, should be Unseated Airways coming on. So keep a listen out for that. Have a wonderful evening, my beautiful audience, and I will see you all in a couple weeks. We should have... No, I don't... I can't say who the guest is yet because we haven't confirmed them. But we should have another wonderful guest next week if all goes well. Friends, this is Tropical by Plum Tree. This has been Amateur Hour. I've been Ewan. This has been Julian. And yeah, have a wonderful evening. Thank you.